This is the Beat Your Genes podcast, and my name is Nate G. I created this podcast to bridge together the science of evolutionary psychology and the clinical experience of Dr. Doug Lyle, all so that we can discover what life is all about. In each episode, Dr. Lyle analyzes and explains the psychology behind real-life situations from our listeners on topics like romance, friendship, work, family, health, and many more. We broadcast live every Wednesday at 8:30 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, which means you can call us during the show and ask Dr. Lyle a question. The U.S. number is 657-383-0751, or send in your question through the website www.beatyourgenes.org. All right. Good evening, everybody. It's Nate G, along with Dr. Doug Lyle with the Beat Your Genes podcast. Dr. Lyle, how are you doing today?
Good. How about yourself? All going well?
Yeah, everything's going pretty good. You know, last week, this is before, probably a couple days after the show ended, a Google employee wrote up a memo, and he called it Google's Ideological Echo Chamber, How Bias Clouds Are Thinking About Diversity and Inclusion.
Yeah.
So his name is James Damore. He's a Google engineer, and he wrote this memo to discuss equal representation in the technology field and also to discuss the current programs in place at Google to create that type of diversity or that type of representation. And he used a lot of stuff that we've talked about in the show, explaining evolutionary psychology, specifically biological differences between men and women. And he offered what I thought was a pretty genius alternative approach to creating equal representation. And the memo starts off with James Damore saying, quote, "I value diversity and inclusion, am not denying that sexism exists, and I don't endorse using stereotypes," end quote. Well, it turns out that the CEO of Google did not read that first line of the memo because James Damore was fired on Monday.
Yeah.
As the CEO, Sundar Pichai, put it in an email, he had, quote, "crossed the line by advancing harmful gender stereotypes," end quote. So today on our show, we'll be going over this memo point by point. We're going to explore some of the claims made by Mr. Damore, which are from the evolutionary psychology theories that we've talked about, and then figuring out probably why he was fired and talking about maybe at this point, how can he beat his genes? So the memo, it's a 10-page memo, but you know, we're not going to go over line by line, but we're going to go over six main points that I came up with and answer some questions. I got a couple of emails from our listeners who wanted to hear you talk about this because they had heard a lot of this information from our show, and then reading it from the memo from the news, it was actually an interesting way to see these ideas go mainstream. So, ready, Dr. Lyle?
Sure.
All right. So, point one. This is from the beginning of the memo. Quote, "People generally have good intentions, but we all have biases which are invisible to us. Thankfully, open and honest discussion with those who disagree can highlight our blind spots and help us grow, which is why I wrote this document," end quote. All right. Well, first off, I don't believe that people have either good or bad intentions. I think from what I've learned with you, Dr. Law, people have cooperative intentions. So they're willing to cooperate on a mutually beneficial goal, whether or not it's called good or bad. So telling someone, especially publicly, a company, that you're about to point out all their biases and hypocrisy seems to me like he's signaling the beginning of a vicious cycle. What say you, Dr. Lau?
Ah, that's very good. Good thinking. I have a, in general, even though we, of course, ignore our own advice on this on this podcast because it's ours and we do what we want. But in general, we want to have a stance that I call never criticize nobody. And this is my, in my view, this is like, I think of an old mafia don with his cigar talking to his young nephew about how on earth he survived 50 years in the rackets. And the answer is never criticize nobody, because if you criticize somebody, you're going to get shot. So James Damore here got shot, and he didn't follow the rule of never criticize nobody, which is fine. I hope he lands on his feet. It's not like the criticism. It'll be very interesting to hear what he said. I just heard some news clips about it. I don't have no idea how out of line or wacky this guy is, but certainly from what I was reading and what I heard, what he was talking about all sounded pretty reasonable. But let's circle back around to your issue. Yeah, good intentions, bad intentions. Yeah, actually what we're talking about is people seek their own interest, and they are trying to do things that will increase the statistical likelihood of their genes surviving. So that's fundamentally what it is that they're trying to do. Now, they will strategically cooperate, and they will also fight. Okay, so they tend to be quite cooperative, but they're going to be what I call conditionally hawkish. In other words, when there is a time and a place to take down a competitor under the right circumstances, then they very well may do so. And so in this case, he in advancing his own position for his own reasons, he walked right into somebody else's best genetic interest, and somebody found it in their best genetic interest to fire him. So he was not in a position of power with respect to that decision. I hope that he is in a position of power financially, so that this is really no big deal, and that this was nothing more than for him than a way to go public and to highlight, you know, some things about him. So anyway, interesting story. Let's hear more.
Okay, so he goes on with the memo and he says, quote, "At Google, we talk so much about unconscious bias as it applies to race and gender, but we rarely discuss our moral biases. And political orientation is actually a result of deep moral preferences and thus biases." And he goes on to list the left biases and the right biases, and they are as follows. Left biases are compassion for the weak. Disparities are due to injustice. Humans are inherently cooperative. Change is good, i.e. instability, and high openness to new experience. Whereas the right biases are respect for the strong and authority figures. Disparities are usually natural and just. Humans are inherently competitive. Change is dangerous, and low openness to new experience. And
very
what he
good.
Says is...
That's, yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, this is stuff we've talked about on previous podcasts, but what he also says is neither side is 100% correct, but he says that both viewpoints are necessary for a functioning society, or in this case, a company. A company too far to the right might be slow to react, overly hierarchical, and untrusting of others. In contrast, a company too far to the left will be constantly changing, over-diversify, and overly trust its employees and competitors. However, he claims that since Google has such a large left bias, they are incorrectly assuming that gender disparity in the workplace is due to injustice. So how accurate do you think his classification of these political biases are?
Good. They sound pretty good. I haven't gone up and down and looked at data supporting them, but and I actually have already forgotten the ones that you said, but it sounded right on target. And so he's obviously done his homework. This isn't somebody that's been sloppy. And let's continue on as he talks about it sounds like under discussion at Google has been the issue of disparity with respect to male and female, what success and standing and status in high tech. Is that kind of the core of this?
Yeah, I think recently Google had an article that came out, and they found that they have, I think, only 30-something percent of their workforce was female, and that females were getting paid a little bit less than the men in Google in particular. So they were scrambling trying to figure out how to even this out and make it about 50-50 or in context with the population.
My God, that's just a thing of beauty. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, so he continues, and what he's trying to do essentially is tell through this memo, tell people that it may not be because of disparity or some sort of injustice in the workplace. What he says is that it's he titles this possible non-bias causes of the gender gap in technology.
Right.
And he goes on to describe personality differences. And he says that women on average have more openness directed towards feelings and aesthetics rather than ideas, which makes them empathize versus systematize, which is what men do. And these differences explain why women relatively prefer jobs in social or artistic areas, whereas men like coding because it requires systematizing. or systemizing.
Yeah, I'm not sure I would quite use the language he used. So he say the first sentence again of this.
Okay. Openness, women on average have more openness directed towards feelings and aesthetics rather than ideas. Women generally also have a stronger interest.
Okay, that's where he's making a mistake, by the way.
Okay.
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 So you can't have a feeling without computations. So there's no such thing as women being less interested in ideas. Okay. So this is he's slopping together some lay observation and something else that he's read somewhere, and it's getting a little bit sloppy there. I don't think he can probably defend that, but he can certainly defend the differences in intellectual capacities with respect to certain types of activities. And so there's no doubt at all that there is substantial differences in the two populations of two curves of male and female brain. Male and female brain are not the same brain. That brain may overlap a tremendous amount, and of course it does. So it overlaps with respect to functions very much so. And the two bell curves with respect to any given characteristic overlap. So in other words, there's going to be a phase shift so that one of the bell curves is going to be higher than the other bell curve on some specific function. So for example, when it comes to vocabulary, females are shifted to the right. In other words, the average female has a higher vocabulary than the average male. We think we know why that is, by the way. That was, you know, probably figured out by Jeffrey Miller or somebody he was talking to, that females use the vocabulary of males in order to detect their IQ, because IQ is a fitness indicator. And so as a result, the higher vocabulary is a very high indicator of IQ. Vocabulary all by itself, I believe, correlates 0.7 with IQ. So it's a tremendously good fitness indicator. And so as a result, if you are going to be using that as an important decision-making tool for deciding who to mate with, then you had better not get bluffed by a guy making up words that you haven't heard. So when he starts to use words that you know and he uses them incorrectly, you will know that that actually is not part of his vocabulary. And so so therefore, it makes sense that females would actually run ahead of males a little bit by a certain percentage in order to essentially check. This is a check on males bluffing. So that is something that is interesting. On the other hand, males are clearly superior in mathematics, and this is absolutely genetic in origin. And the shift between the two curves may not be great, but it's great enough for there to be a much higher concentration. The way bell curves are constructed, as you get out into the tails, the differences become more pronounced. So when you get to the extremes, there's far more males that are extremely bright in mathematics than there are females. That's just the nature of these two brains. Just as you're going to find, there's going to be far more females that are going to be extremely high in their verbal abilities than there are going to be males. So this is, and it turns out that these kinds of abilities lend themselves very well to high tech. And therefore, the males are going to dominate high tech in terms of abilities. This isn't for any of our females listening or anybody that this sounds like, you know, sexist talk on a chalkboard, you know, scratching the chalkboard. It's not. In the same way, keep in mind that the world record for giving birth to new offspring is 69. And that is held by a female, and all other second and third and fourth and fifth and 100th place. They're all held by females all the way down. So it's also true.
Every
that
single one?
I do not. What's that?
No, nothing. I was making a joke.
Yeah.
Sorry.
It's also true that I do not believe, although I could be wrong, but certainly in the modern environment, there has not been a single female on Earth that probably could have played on any male professional sports team at the major level, whether it's hockey, basketball, football, or baseball. So I could be wrong, but I don't think so. I don't think there's been a single WNBA player that could even come close, probably could not play on a major college basketball team. Okay. Now, we don't consider this to be anything important at all. We just recognize that there's these extraordinary individual differences. The average male and the average female may not be that difference in terms of their size and strength. But when we get out to the tail of the bell curves, we once again find the same extraordinary differences. So we will find an occasional 6'8" female, but that 6'8" female will never be able to jump 30 inches off the ground and won't be 220 pounds and can bench press 225 pounds 50 times. So once again, when we start talking about in the high ends of bell curves, when there's a phase shift between the male and female, you're going to start to find quite striking differences in the amount that these things are going to show up in these populations. So his comment here, of course it would be the case that in an area of the world where the particular skills happen to be correlated with a variable where there's a striking difference between the male and female brain, which isn't going to be true in a lot of other things. So it's not going to be as true in sales. I would probably give sales a dead heat because the females are going to be better at reading emotional responses, and they're going to be kinder and smoother. They're going to, et cetera. But at the same time, they're not as going to be as driven. So in the sales arena, I would expect to find the successes of males and females to be relatively equivalent, and I think that's what we probably will find. But in something like high tech, you can forget it. Like no responsible biologist looking at the score sheet would say that we should see anything other than males completely dominating this field. So obviously, Google, in trying to, you know, scratch their liberal heads and pull their liberal hair out, trying to figure out how it is that their females are not making as much money as their males and that they don't have as many females as males, this is an absolute absurdity. And if James Damore was anywhere near this argument, of course, he's putting forth what is obvious. Like, these people are all living in a land of the emperor's new clothes, and they're pretending that they're seeing clothes. You got to be kidding me. The truth is it's very likely that Google female employees are overpaid if they're anywhere close. And it's very likely that they're overrepresented. And the liberal bias that, believe me, it isn't unconscious. It's very conscious and deep. That they are, for their own liberal issues, for good or for ill, they are completely lost in space here and ignoring obvious realities. Yeah, so let's go ahead and continue.
Yeah, let's continue with the personality difference. So we've established openness directed towards feelings and aesthetics rather than ideas. That's not entirely correct. How about he says also women generally also have a stronger interest in people rather than things relative to men.
Oh, yeah. There's no question. I have no doubt that he's right there. I mean, that's perfectly legitimate.
He has a citation
from
an article. I'm pulling it up here from the Gen Differences in Personality and Interest by the Social and Personality Psychology Compass.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah.
he has citations all over this memo.
Sure.
He says this is interpreted.
Man on a
empathizing.
Mission.
Yeah, right. We'll go over that at the very end as to why you think he did this. But empathizing versus systemizing is basically what this boils down to.
Yeah, I think that's a mistake. And I think he's confusing things and acting as if those two things would somehow be a dichotomy. Okay. He's actually confusing domains of human activity here. Systematizing versus empathizing, there is no such thing as if I'm not empathic, then I'm systematizing things, but if I'm systemizing things, I'm not empathic. That's just absurd. He's mixing apples and oranges here in a way that he doesn't need to. So that's okay. I mean, he's obviously trying to figure this out, and he's put a lot of thought into it, but he's blundering
closer than a lot of people
around the landscape a little bit. That's all right. Let's see what else he has to say.
And then he goes with extroversion expressed as gregariousness rather than assertiveness. So it sounds like he's mixing agreeability and extroversion. And then he also has another sentence, also higher agreeableness. So doesn't quite get that assertiveness and agreeableness are the same relative thing.
Right. That's right. That's good. So, but that's okay. He's working at this thing. And yes, females are more agreeable. And so females are going to be, you know, easier to get along with generally. That doesn't mean that there aren't kind of shark-toothed females out there that are very difficult. But, again, we're talking bell curves here. And so in most times, in most positions of authority, it's going to be the case that you need to have some substantial amount of disagreeability. And the reason that's going to be true is that in any collective endeavor, there are very significant conflicts of interest between the major players, all the way down the line to the guy in the shop that's pushing a broom. And as a result, it can be uncomfortable to actually tell people, no, we're doing it this way, not that way. We're going to do it. This is going to be not in your interest. Too bad. It is what I see in the company interest. So you're going to have to hurt a lot of feelings. And you're going to have to be okay with it. And so basically, nice guys make lousy CEOs. And therefore, women in general are not that there aren't plenty of disagreeable women, but in general, they as a bell curve of collective people, they are not going to have as many of the right combination of disagreeableness along with the high conscientiousness, high intelligence, and everything else that it might take to make a great CEO. Now, that doesn't mean that there might not be, first of all kinds of women with the disagreeability to pull this off. But that's irrelevant. We're talking about statistical issues here about how likely these characteristics would fall in one individual. Forget CEO, any kind of management position. In my own life, I have seen female managers struggle trying to take into account a bunch of others, you know, disturbed feelings of the underlings and they're grumbling and they're crying and they're whining, et cetera, and actually struggling with it. And I've seen less struggling with males who are like, too bad. That's just the way it goes. Okay. And so this is that difference is, you know, I think not trivial. And probably it also accounts for a percentage of the less interest in women have in even pursuing positions in management, because I think that women are going to smell that's going to be a problem, and they don't necessarily want to put themselves in the middle of those conflicts of interest if they have considerable amount of empathy. And so there are a number of reasons why men would tend to be higher in the pecking order in organizations that have nothing to do with intelligence, even if we were talking about an organization where the content area wasn't gender related. Now in high tech, the content area is absolutely gender ability related. So when you add that to the fact that there's a certain amount of cussedness and disagreeability that aids and abets people in positions of management, we're starting to see why it is that management would be heavily male-laden with absolutely no bias in any system at all. All right, let's go ahead. Keep rolling.
Yeah, he explains a lot of what you just said. He said that the higher agreeableness leads to women generally having a harder time negotiating salary, asking for raises, speaking up, and leading. And he says these are just average differences, and there's overlap between men and women, but this is seen solely as a woman's issue, which means that programs that are meant to remedy this exclude many of the agreeable men who have the same issue.
Ah, okay. Fair enough. Right. Right. Good for him. I wouldn't have thought of that because I'm not in that social situation. So yeah, that would make sense. Right. It's seen as a woman's issue rather than an agreeableness issue.
Right. Rather than disagreeable versus agreeable. Yeah.
Sure.
Okay.
Which is, good. Go ahead. Good thinking.
Yeah, so the third one is neuroticism. Basically, he mixes conscientiousness here because he assigns higher anxiety with neuroticism. and lower stress tolerance. And my understanding was that some of anxiety comes from hyper-conscientiousness, overestimating the worst case scenarios. But he just says neuroticism, and he says this may contribute to the higher levels of anxiety that women report on the Google reports, and also for the lower number of women in high stress jobs.
Well, yeah. So this is neuroticism, and depending upon whose acronym of the Big Five you're talking about, also is what we're going to call emotional stability. Mm-hmm. So I interestingly enough, I'm not actually really interested in gender differences very much. So I was not aware that there's any significant differences in emotional stability between men and women. I was not aware that there was any evidence for that. So perhaps there is. I would expect, if there is such an effect, I would expect it would be pretty low. Certainly, I wouldn't expect there would be much difference in conscientiousness. I'm not seeing any reason for that. I see the big action as being in domain differences in IQ and certainly agreeable, disagreeable. Those are the two main things I see. I can't see necessarily differences in openness. If I would expect any differences in openness, I would actually expect men to be more open. In other words, they're not going to seem open to new ideas, but they should be more adventurous and more risk-taking. I would think just because it could be a fitness indicator when you survive it. So it would be a good male fitness indicator. But I don't know. These are probably some pretty subtle numbers. But
Can you talk a little bit more about the IQ differences? Well, one of our listeners had a question about that.
Yeah. The average IQ differences between males and females is zero. So if you take the two bell curves between men and women, you're going to find that the bell curves on average sit right on top of each other. Now, a useful thing in IQ is to divide IQ into two different types of problems. In other words, if you take an IQ test, what they've done in order to create an IQ test, what they did was they took a sample of different types of problems that the human mind can solve and seems to try to solve for various and sundry things. So there wasn't any significant arithmetic going on in nature, but there would have been a little bit. Four sticks over there, three of my coconuts for 4 of your apples, whatever. So what they've done is that they look at the modern world and look at the kinds of problems that people solve, and they've come up with, on one of the most famous intelligence scales, I think it was 11 content areas, little different things. So to describe for people what an intelligence test looks like, intelligence test might have one part of intelligence test would be for the examiner to say off a string of digits like 7, 8, 3, 2, and then you have to say it back. And then if you get that right, then they'll go 2, 5, 8, 9, 1, and then you got to say that back. So then you'll go until you miss, and then they'll try you on say 5 digits again. If you get it right the second time, then we'll go to 6 digits, see how you do then. So in this way, we take chance out of it in the fact that you might have a lapse of concentration for a second, but we'll try you at that level again, et cetera. So as we go through the IQ tests, and then there might be one where we have you do simple arithmetic problems, and then we might have one where we're going to go through vocabulary, then we're going to have, we'll read you a saying like, what does it mean that, one swallow doesn't make a summer, okay? And then you're going to have to tell me what that means. And the more abstract you say that back, the smarter the more credit you get. And so if you say, if one swallow comes, that doesn't mean the summer's here. Well, you get 1 point for that. But if you say, one swallow doesn't make a summer, means that just because one incident happens doesn't mean that there's actually a sea change. Okay. Oh, okay. Well, that's 2 points. So in this way, an IQ test, what it does is it will take these 11 or 10 or 7 or however many domains a specific IQ test uses, And it'll do a bunch of little arithmetic problems, and it might be geometry problems, then it might do word stories, and then it might do analogies, and then it might do straight vocabulary, and then it might do, you know, something else, some complicated logic thing. That's what it's going to do. And each of those areas, they're going to have a whole bunch of little items that are highly interrelated, so that essentially they're getting themselves, they're measuring this a bunch of different times so that they can really see where you are relative to other people on that particular mental ability. All right. Now, so as you can imagine, any two IQ tests are not going to correlate super high because they each use slightly different domains and they have slightly different questions. And therefore, any pair of IQ tests only correlates 0.8, which I always sort of rolled my eyes a little bit because IQ itself correlates 0.7 with the simplest possible vocabulary test that you can give in like 60 seconds. So it's an hour and $380, and the psychologist feels really important, and you know what I mean, signs their name to a report, whatever. Okay, so. But the bottom line is it can be interesting looking at IQ tests because you can see once in a while you will see somebody that has a particular extraordinary deficit, and you'll be like, huh, that's odd. Like, what a strange brain. You have your 80th to 99th percentile in seven different areas, and in this one area you're at the second percentile. Okay, that's what you call a learning disability. Now, these days everybody's learning disabled, but you know, has a low IQ and everybody's angling for extra help at school. It's all ridiculous. But the bottom line is that the concept of a learning disability is very interesting and legitimate, which is that you might have someone that is very that is a 50th percentile brain, but over here on this one thing, they're in the bottom 5 percentile. It's like, whoa, that could be a very constraining neural circuit, set of circuits with respect to solving certain academic problems. So you know, IQ testing can sometimes reveal that, and it's very interesting when you'll see that. And in my career, I've seen a few oddball-looking brains in my time. I had a child 30 years ago that had had I forget what kind of anoxia situation he had. I forget what you call it. But when you're born and you were starved of oxygen a little bit during delivery, so this funny kid had super high IQ, and so half of his IQ test looked like he was over, you know, 98th percentile, and then half of his IQ test looked like he was below the fifth percentile. And his parents were going crazy. Like they'd tell him to do something, and he wouldn't do it or couldn't do it, and then he'd turn around and do something brilliant. And yeah, I loved the kid. He was extremely likable. And to him, the world was making perfect sense. He didn't understand the problem. He was actually negotiating the world fine. But meanwhile, everybody else around him, every teacher and his parents and his brother and sister, are just going nuts because his behavior wasn't making sense to them. Yeah, yes, he thought he was messing with them, which he wasn't. He was actually a really sweet kid. So the bottom line is that IQ testing is useful. That's how it's done. Usually it's not too exciting. In other words, usually a 90th percentile person has their abilities on an IQ test somewhere between 70 and 95 on every domain. That's more or less what it is. And if you have somebody that's very bright, they're at the 98th percentile, then pretty much everything they do is between the 85th and the 99th percentile. They got a few weaknesses and they got a bunch of strengths, and that's why they're a 1 in 50 human. So males and females. Males and females are their overall IQs on these. If we take in all the whole baskets of these different kinds of problems, their IQs are exactly the same, which is interesting. And I'm sure there's deep genetic biological reasons why we would expect that would be true. In other words, I'm not going to get into the game theory that would be associated there, but that makes sense that that would be the case. However, evolution has dictated that the male and female will not all be doing the same things throughout the course of their lifetime. So that IQ will be dedicated to different types of problems. Okay. So as a result, the male and female brain are not the same. Across these, for example, let's suppose we say it's 10 different domains of problem solving. Now, you could, in theory, make it 20. But when you do that, if you start to factor analyze 20 different problems, you're going to start to find that they factor analyze into just a few. Okay? Geometrical, arithmetic, vocabulary, we're pretty well done. Memory, okay? By the time you have a few domains measured, we've more or less got it. So it's going to turn out that the brains of the male and female across evolutionary time had to solve different types of problems. As a result, they were genetically selected for solving, given the same general horsepower, the engine is dedicated to certain problems and not as dedicated as much to other problems. So, i.e., she throws like a girl. Okay, so that's how this is going to work out. Now, meanwhile, men don't do very well at hand-eye coordination multitasking. That's something that females did, talking to their friends, watching the kids, picking berries. Okay, so the females apparently have algorithms in there that are smoother for doing that type of thing. And it's obviously men can wrap the myelin sheath around a set of problems around their desk and get very good at multitasking around their desk, but they're not naturally good at it. They're not, on average, naturally as good as females. So once again, the two bell curves overlap, but when we start looking inside the components of intelligence, we are going to find that it's heterogeneous, that there isn't such thing as, quote, how intelligent somebody is. There's intelligence within domains, okay? So as a result, yeah, Albert Einstein didn't have a vocabulary that would blow anybody away. Albert Einstein undoubtedly had a 98th or 99% of a vocabulary, but the guy's mathematical abilities were 1 in 10 or 20,000. Okay, so this is how this is going to work. And so anyway, when it comes to – oh, the other issue about – this is my understanding, and I haven't read the original research, but this is coming out of Steven Pinker. So – it's a really good source, and I believe that it's true. That
the
two bell curves.
The blank slate.
Yes, Steven Pinker is, you know, one of our greatest, mankind's greatest thinkers right now. The bell curves apparently for males versus females are somewhat different in terms of the shape of the bell curve. So the female bell curve appears to have a higher amplitude, it's squeezed. The standard deviation is effectively less. The male bell curve, although the curve is sitting right on top, though the same mean, the standard deviation is not the same. So the curve is flatter. And that means that there are less males in the dead center middle relative to how many there are at the edges. Do I have that right? That's correct. So as you start to go out into the tail of the male bell curve, there's more people. For example, the way they score IQ is in anybody. Sorry for statisticians, people that don't know any stats, but the mean of the IQ is scored at 100, and then 15 points is what's called the standard deviation. So that takes you out to the 84th percentile. And then another standard deviation takes you out to 130, so that takes you out to 98th percentile. So in the top 2 percentile, at 130, in theory, you would have 2% of the distribution that would be above 130. Now, that's not going to be true for both males and females. When you put them all in the same pot, that isn't how it's going to work. So you're going to have, at the score that is required to get 130 on this test, you're going to have more males at 130 than you're going to have females at 130.
Okay.
So that's how this
that
is going
explains.
To work.
Yeah.
There are,
okay.
Right. There are going to be more males at 70 than there are going to be females at 70. So more males are morons and more males are geniuses. And that's just the way it is. So that is also going to explain potentially very high achievement in the modern world that gets magnified by the extraordinary financial rewards that it can take to be very, very high in intelligence. Now, that's not going to be true in the Stone Age. So if you have some guy that's a 1 in 1,000 in the Stone Age for brains, that's a big deal. How much better of a hunter is he? that intelligence is quickly attenuated. The effects of it are attenuated quickly by slightly below average physique. It's like, forget it. Okay. But in the modern environment, if you're the founder of Google and you're sitting on 145 IQ, and if they're listening, they're probably offended. You know what I mean? But that's what these guys are. They're all these guys are basically, they're basically one in 300. Yeah. And undoubtedly lousy hunters. And so the bottom line is that you're much more likely to find 145, 150, i.e. 1 in 300, 1 in 500. Those people are now being particularly, when we look inside the domains of certain content areas and certain economic problems like the mathematically oriented problems of high tech, you're going to find that the males not only are the males more concentrated generally in high IQ and low IQ, they are also vastly more concentrated when it comes to the content areas of mathematics. And so now you start realizing, well, wait a second. Not only are there more really smart males than there are really smart females by percentage, it's also true that that smartness is heavily laden in these mathematically based things rather than verbal. Okay, so and then you turn that around and realize, and then we're going to add disagreeability to the CEO issue, and now we should absolutely expect that there would be major differences in high management jobs in high tech. Okay, and I have no doubt that despite the fact that it's a young industry and that it's all hip and it's cool to be liberal and everything like that, the truth of the matter is you will probably find that if you were to look at more sales-oriented industries like real estate, if you were to look at, cosmetics, commodities, beauty-oriented products, et cetera, but if you were to look at sales in general, I think that high-performing sales, you might not find a lot of difference. But when I think about sales management, though, sales management, you got to be pretty disagreeable. It's probably male-dominated, but for no other reason than that. You're not going to find you won't find verbal IQ differences in males and females that are in high-ticket sales. Mm-hmm. So anyway, so let's go on. What else does this guy have to say?
Well, so I wanted to share with our audience. So CNN did a piece on this memo, and of course, every news station was talking about it and how controversial it was. And CNN did a piece, and I listened to a little bit of all these news stations, and I caught a very interesting part on this memo. So here's the first clip from CNN introducing this memo.
A manifesto written by one of Google's male engineers is sparking outrage. He claims that women are less suited for certain tech jobs than men. Why? Biology, seriously. Now Google is responding, and our senior technology correspondent, Laura Siegel, is here with us. You have done so much to cover the fight for equality, especially in Silicon Valley.
So she goes on with Laura Siegel, the chief tech correspondent, and they go reviewing the memo and what's so interesting, but about what's interesting about this memo and what they don't like about it. But what I found pretty ridiculous about their commentary is the following. What they say at the very end of their segment, and here it is.
That you saw a lot of things happening, and you need diversity of mindset when it comes to engineers for building great products. You know, to have, when you're looking at code, you have engineers who are coding future products that will change the world. Of course, you're going to need different types of people. You need empathy. You need humanity. And that's all, you know, the conversation that's happening now that you see with this manifesto coming out.
I guess the only good thing that comes of something like this is that we talk about it.
Yeah.
And that it gets more attention. Laura Siegel,
thank you for being
on it as always.
So you need diversity of mind. So we're all the same and we're not different, but to create a great product, you need diversity of mindset. You need different types of people. You need empathy.
Yeah.
You need humanity. Dr. Lyle, I don't get it. On one hand, they're condemning this memo, calling it a manifesto, for daring to suggest that women and men have real biological differences. But in the exact same segment, they go on to describe what these differences are and why we need them in tech.
Well done. Just beautiful. Well done, Nate. I actually, that slipped right past me, the irony of that. But that's a good job. Good job. Really good insight. Yeah, this is, I'm reminded of what I believe was a similar slip that took place in the end of a book called, it's Chris Ryan and his wife wrote this thing. It's
Sex at Dawn.
Yeah, Sex at Dawn. So I'm reminded at Sex at Dawn that, you know, which was an interesting book, and I think I learned some things from the book. There was things that they had wrong in the book, but but at the end, they essentially repudiate their own thesis in the final chapter. They completely did exactly what you just saw. They spend this whole time talking. They spend 300 pages talking about how women are really just as loose and wild as men, and this is all social conditioning, and that we shouldn't have any real pair bonding, or, you know, we can be friendly as pair bonds, but we ought to be just sleeping with each other's wives and husbands and not worried about it, okay, just like the bonobos do, okay? So this is their whole thesis, and that men really aren't, you know, any more hound dog than women. The women are just as wild and interested in diversity as the men. So that all sounds nice. And then they say, well, now we're going to the time when we're going to try to tell you what we would do about this problem. And, you know, well, here's the deal. What are we going to really do if you're a woman and your guy is wanting to step out on you or does step out on you? You know, and here you are, you might feel like doing that in retaliation even though you really don't want to. Wow. Kaboom.
Wow.
Okay. They admit that the female is not that driven for casual sexual activity. Right out there, right after they've made this whole case. So they absolutely expose the fact that their subconscious, you know, absolutely knows the truth about this, and they write it right into their book right in our face after they've been denying it for 300 pages. And that is precisely what you just picked up on. It went right past me, so the irony of what it is that I'm so used to listening people talk about, you know, that we need diversity of this and that I just completely went to sleep. Incidentally, I have no reason to think that in principle diversity is useful for anything. Like, where did anybody get this idea? This idea, of course, would go back to the idea that we don't want to be, you know, lawfully discriminating against human beings and not having some people drink from a drinking fountain. I mean, this is ridiculous. If a woman wants to be a priest or a rabbi or anything like that, there's, as far as I'm concerned, it's absurd that they shouldn't be able to do that, including the women that they talked about in that movie, Hidden Figures, you know, a rocket scientist, for God's sakes. So, you know, and the irony of that is that it was black females who were apparently, there was a trio of them that were extraordinary, and that they're very important in the development of important advances at NASA. So, you know, a talent and interest and capability can come from any quarter. And we should, of course, embrace the fact that it can. But when it has statistical realities that it turns out that it may not typically come from any quarter. So, you know, I have to tell you that there's not a lot of Latinos in the NBA. And there may never be, because that population may on average not sprout up a bunch of 6'6" humans. And so we may find out in 150 years, despite that being the case, that we continue to have that game dominated by African Americans, and i.e. people from more recently genes coming from Africa, that has the talents, that has the native talents to do that particular athletic process extremely well. So this is, you know, we can recognize regularities. We don't say, well, gee, it would be really good for the world if we had a couple of Latinos on every NBA team, and then a couple of Nordics, and then a couple of Chinese or Asians, and then, you know, I don't know, maybe we should have Southern Asians and Northern Asians because we need to have diversity there, and then we got to, you know, I was like, what the hell are we talking about? We want the
every
we want the people on that.
Every team would need to have like 200 people on there, right?
Yeah, and let's
just
put a couple of women on there too, and maybe a child, okay? So the point is that let's get serious. The job of any company is not to promote a social cause unless that's the cause of the company. The cause, the responsibility of the company is to compete most effectively in the marketplace in order to get rates of return on investment for the stockholders. That is the job of the company. That is the job of the CEO, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And any nonsense about promoting diversity for diversity's sake is like just flat out absurd. So anyway,
mm-hmm.
that's my – since this is our podcast, we can say whatever we want. But just as people – just, you know, if Google takes down my website in the next week –
we'll know why.
We did not follow our own rule that says never criticize nobody.
All right. So he keeps going in the memo and he talks about men's
yeah.
higher drive for status, which is we've talked
yeah.
about several times in the podcast. And
yeah.
he goes on, he says, quote, "We always ask why we don't see women in top leadership positions, but we never ask why we see so many men in these jobs.
Right.
These positions require long, stressful hours and may not be worth it for people who want a balanced and fulfilling life." Now, I've heard this
sure.
before by John Mackey, CEO of Whole Foods.
Mm-hmm.
he did a talk on this exact thing, is that he also mm-hmm. he believes that there aren't a lot of women CEOs because they tend to be more wise about creating a balanced life, which is not
mm-hmm.
very conducive to a CEO lifestyle. But
mm-hmm.
Jason Damore goes on. He says status is the primary metric that men are judged on, pushing
mm-hmm.
many men into these higher paying, less satisfying jobs for the status that they entail. And the
mm-hmm.
same forces that lead men into high pay, high stress jobs in tech and leadership also cause men to take undesirable and dangerous jobs like coal mining, garbage collection, and firefighting. And men also,
right.
as a result, suffer 93% of work-related deaths. Well,
mm-hmm.
it's reminded me about a clip, a comedian that I saw, Bill Burr, and he tended to agree with this part when someone told him that being a mother was the most difficult job in the world. So let's hear what he has to say about this.
Yeah, like, really? Being a mother is the most difficult job on the planet? Oh, yeah, all those mothers who die every year from black lung, from inhaling all that coal dust. Dude, women are just constantly patting themselves on the back about how difficult their lives are, and no one corrects them because they want to fuck them.
Well, Bill Burr, there's only one of those. He's a remarkable comedian. Yeah, I wouldn't have quite used his words, but the truth of the matter is I've seen the same thing. I have seen men sit silent and nod their heads in various and sundry discussions of these kinds, and in order to not offend everybody and to to personally serve their personal genetic best interest, which is to look like they're very agreeable and accommodating and nice, and they'd make a good daddy for your baby if you'd let them do it, okay? So, of course, this is what's going on. This is what's going on in the fanatical reaches of this company, obviously, and elsewhere. Apparently, I read a little bit that Facebook's not dissimilar. Doesn't surprise me any. These are the founders of these companies come from the highest level of academia, Stanford and Harvard, and so and they're young, and they scored really big early, and so et cetera. So there's track marks in the snow as to their general thinking. And what it is that they're trying to accomplish with their stance on things. So it's kind of disgusting, and it's this guy obviously is full of piss and vinegar. This James Damore guy, he knew what he was doing.
Yeah. I was going to ask you. I said we've got a well-intentioned, smart engineer of a publicly traded, famous tech company wrote an internal memo about a topic that's incredibly misunderstood and vulnerable to a lot of oversimplification. And the memo got leaked to the public. Hard to believe he got fired, right?
Yeah, actually, I have this feeling that I've been here before. When I've met some people that had this kind of history, that I always thought, boy, I'd really like to meet that person. They'd be really interesting. And I meet them, and sure enough, they're smart, but I didn't like them. You know what I'm saying? So I don't know if I'd like this guy or not. I think he's smart as a whip. He's very interesting. He's full of guts, and he's got a message that sounds to me like it's pretty darn close to what I would say the truth is. But he's probably not the easiest guy to live with.
You know, I was thinking I looked up some of his history. He played competitive chess, studied molecular and cellular biology, computational biology at Harvard, Princeton, and MIT. How did he not see this coming? You know, I think he did. And it may be that he was sick of working at Google and he wanted to go out with a big bang. And this kind of circles back to the beat your genes is I think that if he feels so passionately about this to write this memo and he got fired for it, his next employer is going to know for sure where he stands. And so some people might think that beating his genes would mean that he overrides disagreeableness and high conscientiousness. So he gets along with his coworkers and not criticize nobody and keeps his job. But, I believe that maybe what he's done is he made himself known to the world, and he's essentially his unhidden display of his thinking might get him fired from Google, but the next company that hires him is going to send him just the right esteem signals that he needs.
Right. He was in the wrong pond. He was a pond. He probably, probably made a lot of money, and he's probably got plenty of money, and he certainly has plenty of brains, and he's got plenty of brains and plenty of content knowledge to be in the 21st century and to do well. And he's got an unbelievable academic pedigree, obviously. So this guy wasn't worried about where his lunch was going to come from. And so he went out and fired some shots.
And it turns out Julian Assange, the founder of WikiLeaks, just offered him a job. I think it was just yesterday. So
what a surprise. There you go. One disagreeable, strange dude to another. There you go.
Yeah. Well, we covered most of the memo. He presents a few solutions based on some of his personality differences. Like a couple of them is to allow more cooperative behavior to thrive, but don't disadvantage those who are competitive. He says because he believes women are more prone to anxiety, make tech and leadership less stressful by giving them more part-time hours. Giving them more work-life balance. And he goes off. I think the last part is why it's probably the main part of why he gets fired, because I mean, it's certainly not the only part, but he goes on to describe the quote, several discriminatory practices that Google uses to achieve a more equal gender and race representations. Like he says, they have programs, mentoring and classes only for certain races and genders. Says diversity candidates get special treatment, and he says they also lower the bar for diversity candidates. And he just continues reiterating that Google has a left bias and has an intolerance for ideas and evidence that doesn't fit a certain ideology.
Yeah, it's very interesting. This is I'm always brought sort of full circle by a lot of these kinds of discussions, because the truth of the matter is, and the truth of the matter is that the history of the world is checkered with horrendous mistreatment of minority populations or people in a position of weakness of some in some way. So minority, not necessarily racial, could be religious, and certainly male versus female, sort of power structure, et cetera. So there's a just about the time I'm totally disgusted with left-wing bias is about the time I say God bless the liberals, okay? Because without them, we wouldn't have the kind of hell raising that's needed to sometimes, shock the world into course correcting. But that's been happening now for 50 years, and a lot of things have improved as a result of that. But when you do that, you also get some really absurd things going on, like a company that is trying to make it look like everybody in the world is equal. Now, that is insane. And so it's not trusting the fact that human beings are smart enough and tolerant enough to recognize that we are all each individuals. And we have a piece of our identity lines up to our race and our age and our gender and our religion and our nationality. Little pieces, those are little pieces of who it is that we are. But people can look past that and see our individuality really quite easily. And if you fear that people can't do that, then you wind up twisting yourself into a pretzel where you're unable to talk about anything without potentially fearing that you're offending somebody. So this is a part of the pendulum. The pendulum at Google and at other places has swung too far, and they need to get their head straight, or they will misuse their capital that is the investors have invested in them, and they will not, they may survive for many, many years past my lifetime, and they may do very well, depending upon what else they're doing well, but it won't be because of these management mistakes. It will be in spite of them.
Fantastic. Dr. Lyle, as always, we love talking about this stuff with you, and just, it's a pleasure.
All right. Good talking to you, Nate. Good topic. That was a lot of fun. We'll see you soon.
Thanks for listening. If you like what you hear, subscribe, write us a review, or share this podcast with a friend. To send in a question or read more about the show, you can visit our website at www.beatyourgenes.org. Until next time, this is Nate G. and Dr. Lyle with Beat Your Genes, an evolutionary psychology podcast for finding happiness in the modern world.